Siegfried, Part 2. Siegfried, leading the bear, soon reached the cave of the dwarf. "Mime," he called, "where are you? Why do you not come from your hiding place? I know you are somewhere in the cave. Come and see what a nice playfellow I have brought from the forest." Mime, who had crouched with fear behind the forge, lifted his head, but at the sight of the bear standing with Siegfried at the entrance of the cave, he again shrank behind the forge. "Come out at once, you sly little dwarf. I have many questions I wish to ask you," said Siegfried. "Let the bear go, then I will come." With this, the bear only growled the louder, and that frightened the Nibelung even more. "Let the bear go," he cried, "and I will answer every question you ask." "If you were not such a coward, the bear would not growl at you," replied Siegfried. "Still, if you will not come until I let him go, I will send him away. But before I do that, you must promise to answer every question I ask." "Yes, yes, all shall be answered." Siegfried let go of the rope which held the bear, and the beast ran back into the forest. Mime then crept cautiously from behind the forge, looking in every direction to be sure the bear was no longer near. "Come closer," demanded Siegfried. "What a coward you are!" The dwarf crept nearer. He seemed more cowardly than ever as he approached the youth. Siegfried was brave and fearless, and his young face shone with a new light as he looked down upon the crouching figure of the Nibelung. "Mime, today I have been watching the forest beasts with their little ones. The baby birds are like the mother and father bird. The young bear resembles its parents, and the wolf cubs bear likeness to the older ones. The time has come now when you must tell me who I am. I know you cannot be my father, for there is no resemblance between us. What difference does it make to you who your parents are, so long as I love you?" said Mime. "You do not truly love me. You are sly and cowardly and untruthful. Tell me who I am." And with flashing eyes and his powerful arms uplifted, he sprang toward Mime. "Stop, stop," cried the dwarf, shielding his head with his arm. "I will tell you all." Then, in low, sullen tones, he told Siegfried how he had found him, a tiny baby, in the forest, and how, as he lifted him from the ground, a voice had said, "Siegfried is the name of the child." But Mime was very careful not to say one word about the sword. "How do I know you are telling me the truth?" said Siegfried angrily. "I must have some proof. Show me something that will prove to me what you say is true." Mime knew by Siegfried's tone that it would be dangerous to refuse, so he crept behind the forge and brought out the broken sword, Nothung. "Here is the proof. This broken sword lay by your side when I found you." "Broken," said Siegfried as he examined it closely, "but it is made of the best steel. How it shines! How strong it will be when mended! Mend it for me, Mime. This is what I have waited and longed to possess. As soon as the sword is mended, I will leave this hated cave forever and go forth into the world to see what it is like." Turning his face, which was now white with fear, towards Siegfried, Mime said, "Alas, alas, I cannot mend the sword." "You have boasted long of your cunning as a smith. Why can you not do what I ask? If you are skillful enough with your tools to make a silver horn, you ought surely to be able to mend a sword," replied Siegfried impatiently. "Listen to me," said the dwarf, cowering and cringing from head to foot. "The voice which told me your name in the forest so many years ago also told me this. Nothung is the name of the sword. It is a magic sword, and only he who knows no fear can weld it together." "I do not wonder, then," thundered Siegfried, "that you could do nothing with it. Give me the sword, and I will weld it together." He seized the broken sword and impatiently strode toward a huge file which was fastened to the forge, and began to file it to dust, which fell into a small basin. "You are spoiling the sword," screamed Mime. Oh, no, I am not, laughed Siegfried as he filed the faster. Soon the sword, all but the handle, was changed into sparkling dust. He then took the basin which held the powder and placed it on the forge. Reaching up, he grasped the bellows and worked it until the fire had melted the powder into a glowing liquid. Close at hand was the mold, and into it he poured the glowing mass. For one moment he stood with beating heart, wondering if Nothung would be all he expected when he opened the mold. Carefully, he lifted the cover, and there lay the perfect sword. Quickly seizing it with a huge pair of pincers, Siegfried hurried to the forge and plunged the sword into the fire, which was kept at a white heat by the bellows. Allowing it to remain for a moment only in the fierce fire, he grasped it again with the pincers and laid it red-hot upon the anvil. Seizing his huge hammer, with heavy strokes he pounded it until the edges were sharp and thin. Then, again heating it, he fastened it to the handle. At last it was finished, and Siegfried held it up and felt the edges. They must be even sharper for so trusty a sword. For the last time he placed it in the fire and blew the bellows even faster than before. Once more it was red-hot. As he laid it on the anvil and pounded it, the sparks flew in every direction, and Siegfried, filled with joy, sang of the sword and the work it would one day do. Faster and faster fell the mighty hammer. Thinner and sharper grew the keen edges, until the young hero threw aside the hammer and, flourishing the sword in all its new glory above his head, burst into a new, glad, triumphant sword song. Nothung, Nothung, wonderful sword, thy life again have I given. With one powerful blow of the sword, the anvil fell in pieces. How the cave rang with the sword of Nothung, and right with it came the music of Siegfried the Fearless. Mime, terrified at the light which shone from the sparks as they flew about, and also at Siegfried's strength, had fallen upon the ground in another part of the cave. There he lay on his face until Siegfried called to him. Now that I have such a trusty sword, I will leave the cave forever. All over the world will I seek for new tests of my strength, and never again will I come back to you, Mime. Is there anything you wish to say to me before I start? Yes, I have much to say, answered the dwarf as he slowly raised his body. Sit down and I will tell you. You are a strong youth and brave as well, but one thing you do not know. Tell me what the one thing is, said the impatient youth. It is fear, said Mime. Fear, said Siegfried. What is fear? Have you never felt your whole body tremble and your heart beat fast and loud when the wild beasts were growling near you? Have you never run to escape them? No, never, Mime. You've taught me many things. Now teach me fear. Take me to the place where I shall know what you mean by fear. Very well, said the sly Mime. Far distant in the forest is Hate Cavern, the home of the terrible dragon Fafnir. I will take you there, and you will learn fear at once. A dragon? What is a dragon? Asked Siegfried. A dragon is the animal of all animals which most terrifies man, and this one is the most dangerous of them all. The cavern where he dwells has never been approached by mortal since he took up his abode there. He is like a huge, awful worm. He does not walk, but twists and turns his slimy body as he crawls in the dust. His tail has a fatal sting and is long and pointed. No one dares approach him, for if he tries to come from the back, the dragon will be sure to sting him, and if he comes near his head or sides, the poisonous breath will bring instant death. Oh, that is nothing of which to be afraid, laughed Siegfried. He will make me a nice playfellow. But come, let us be off. I'm anxious to see this dragon and know if he can teach me fear. Mime strapped his drinking horn to his belt and, going to an inner part of the cave, filled it with some mysterious liquid. Then turning to Siegfried, he said, I'm ready. All that night they traveled silently through the forest. Each was busy with his own thoughts, so neither spoke. As the sun was rising, Mime said, "Let us stop here. Straight ahead at some distance is the cavern where Fafnir dwells. I will wait for you here. Now go and learn well your lesson." Siegfried was only too glad to get away from the cowardly dwarf. How free and happy he felt as he walked on with Nothung in his hand. "There is the cave. I will lie down here in the sunshine and wait for the dragon," said he, half aloud as he drew himself upon a huge log. The bright morning sun shone on his golden hair, and there was a new light in his eyes as he looked up at the trees. Soon he heard the beautiful song of a forest bird. It was like the music above. So sweet was the song that he scarcely moved. "The bird is certainly singing to me. Why can I not understand her?" thought he. "I will make a whistle from a reed and see if I can answer her." Springing up, he seized a reed. The whistle was soon made, and he tried to answer the bird, but he did not succeed, for the bird would not listen. "I will try my horn," thought he, and putting the horn to his lips, he blew it loud and clear, but instead of the bird song, he heard something else. "Oh ho, that must be the dragon." Again he heard the noise, and sure enough, the squirming, crawling body of the awful monster appeared, coming nearer and nearer to him. "Who are you?" growled the dragon. "I am Siegfried, and Mime said you would teach me what fear is." "I will eat you." The dragon ground his teeth together and thrust out his long red tongue. His ugly face grew darker and darker. "Oh, but you are much mistaken," laughed the youth. This infuriated the dragon, and as he snorted, there poured forth fiery smoke that was deadly poison. Siegfried, however, was wise enough to keep out of the reach of the poisonous smoke, and it did not harm him. "Come nearer to me if you know no fear," sneered the dragon. "Yes, that I will," said Siegfried. With these words, he sprang forward and plunged into the heart of the dragon, Nothung, the mighty sword. "Cursed is the ring, and only sorrow and unhappiness will follow him who possesses it," gasped the dragon, as he fell over dead. Siegfried drew his dripping sword from the body of the monster. As he did so, one drop of the dragon's blood fell upon his hand. It burned as if a coal of fire had touched his hand, and instinctively he thrust it into his mouth to stop the pain. A sudden change came over him. He stood spellbound and listened amazed, for he heard the bird notes as words. "Mime is wicked and cowardly. He loves no one. Everyone who comes near him he harms. He is at this moment making poison with which to kill you. So, brave youth, you must kill him before he does anyone else harm," sang the bird. Siegfried entered the cave where the dragon for so many years had lived with the gold. He took the ring and the magic helmet, but left the bags of gold. He put the ring on his finger and carried the helmet in his hand. In this way he left the cave and met Mime approaching, carrying very carefully the drinking horn. "Here is a nice cool drink for you, my boy, after your hard work." Eyeing him sternly, Siegfried said, "That is poison. I will not touch it." With that he hurled the horn from Mime's trembling hand, and with Nothung killed the cowardly, wicked Nibelung. Once more Siegfried threw himself on the log, but this time his thoughts were different. "I am lonely. Would that my mother were here." Again the bird sang, "I will tell you of someone who will love you better than all the world. High on yonder mountain, surrounded by fire, sleeps a beautiful maiden, awaiting the hero who knows no fear to awaken her. Follow me, and I will show you the way." Filled with joy, Siegfried sprang to his feet and followed the little singer. It was a weary way, but the longing for love made it seem short. Suddenly the bird disappeared, and Siegfried came face to face with the mighty Wotan. Wotan, king of all the giants, was much larger than Siegfried, and in his hand he carried the mighty spear with which he ruled the world. "Where are you going, young man?" asked Wotan. "Yonder on the mountain, upon a rock surrounded by fire, sleeps a beautiful maiden who, when I shall awaken her, will always love me." "Dare you face the fire?" Wotan spoke slowly. "I am not afraid. Do not delay me," and Siegfried attempted to pass. "Stop," commanded the giant king. "I will not," replied the fearless hero. "Stand back, you shall not go," thundered the giant. "My all-powerful mighty spear shall prevent you. Do you think, brave as you are, that you can shatter the spear which for hundreds of years has ruled the world?" Siegfried answered not a word, but raising no tongue high in the air, and with more than giant strength, brought it down upon the mighty spear. A great crash was heard as the spear fell in two pieces at the feet of the king. "Go forward," said Wotan, slowly bowing his head. "I can no longer prevent you. Some power stronger than giant power must rule the world." And turning, he went silently to Valhalla. Siegfried, filled with hope, began to ascend the mountain. He had not climbed far when he noticed the increased heat in the air. "I must be near the circle of fire," thought he, and sure enough, as he looked, he saw the bright red flame shooting almost up to the sky. Nearer and nearer he came, and hotter grew the flames. Soon he stood before the fire. "Only the fire between me and the one I am to love, the one who is to love me," cried he, and with a leap he sprang into the fire. Unharmed, and without one touch of the fire, Siegfried stood before the sleeping one. Somewhat confused, he looked about him. "All the trees are sleeping, so are the flowers, and a horse lies asleep under the tree, and there rests a beautiful young knight. I will go nearer and remove the shield." Slowly he crept nearer the sleeping figure and took away the shield, but under that was a coat of mail. "This coat I must also remove, but it is fastened with steel rings. Come, Wotan, and cut them." Very carefully he cut the rings, and the coat of mail fell jingling to the ground. "Now I will lift the helmet," said he. Tenderly, Siegfried lifted the helmet, and Brunhilde's golden hair fell in long curls over her. "Oh, it is not a man," cried Siegfried as he sprang back. His whole body was trembling, and his heart beat fast and loud. "Now I know what fear is," said he. "A beautiful maiden! Can she love me? Why does she not waken?" Several times he called, but she still slept on. Tremblingly he approached and stood long, gazing thoughtfully upon her. Then he bent and tenderly kissed her, and instantly she awoke, as did all about her. Slowly she raised herself and looked all around her. Long she gazed at her horse. Then, lifting her eyes, she beheld the sunshine, and all the sunshine in her responded in a song, "Hail, thou sunshine!" These were her first words on awakening from her long, long slumber. Then she noticed Siegfried. "You are Siegfried the Fearless. You are the hero who dared come through the fire to rescue me. Yes, the bird sang to me of you, and of the love which would be mine could I but waken you. You are my brave hero, and I will love you always. Yes, love you more than the whole world. And as a pledge of my love, I will give you my brave winged horse. He it was who carried the brave heroes to Valhalla. Although the power of his wings is gone, he is still the swiftest horse on all the earth. He shall be no more Brunhilde's, but Siegfried's horse. Brunhilde, my pledge of love to you shall be this ring. What joy it is to have someone to love." And not heeding the warning of the dragon, Siegfried placed the ring on Brunhilde's finger. Long they sat talking together. Sometimes their joy would burst forth into a song. Brunhilde sang of her life in the beautiful palace of Valhalla, and Siegfried of his spree forest life. Brunhilde sang of the war maidens, Siegfried of his sword Nothung, and of the dragon he had slain, also of the magic fire and the slumbering maiden, but the music which told of their love was sweeter than all the rest. Brunhilde thought no more of Valhalla, Siegfried no more of Mime. So filled with love were they that the whole world seemed to have gained new glory for them.